Now, that's my initial list. I whittled that down from about 16 different ways that I spliced and diced no to maybe the 7 or 8 that I actually gave you. For your culture and for your own intellectual stimulation, it would be interesting for you to add to my list. What else do you think no means? What are some other experiences that you've gone through and some nuances that you've gone through? And, you know, sometimes means no, I'm asking at the wrong time. I didn't teach on that. But that's the person who, and I'll get to this in a moment in a small way, this is the person who says no because they're not in a position to even respond to you right now. So, you know, it's like the ER doctor at our church. I call them as they're about to walk into the ER. Hey, could you be on the worship arts team on Sunday? We really need somebody to sing a solo. Nope. Okay. Well, they're walking into the ER. You know, they're about to go perform surgery. This probably wasn't the very best time. So you could think of other ways that you get no, but what I'm trying to do is help you realize that a no is not always a dead end. It's often a fork in the road. So two transitional thoughts before I talk about how to prevent a no altogether. First of all, one of my most powerful phrases that I would ever give you in talking to anybody who gives you a no is what I might call the Yoda phrase, and it is this phrase, give it a try. Give it a try. Give it a try. As Yoda said, there is no try, there is only do, but in this case, Yoda was wrong. He's also wrong about that whole force thing and a bunch of other stuff too. I mean, I don't think he actually was able to levitate that fighter jet, but nonetheless. I mean, that's not like real history, is it? That didn't really happen a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Yeah, I didn't think so. A phrase to add to your vocabulary is give it a try. Did you hear the phrase? Say it with me. Give it a try. Turn to your neighbor and say, give it a try. This is a very powerful, powerful phrase. Give it a try. Settle down. In the front row. Go get a room. Okay, give it a try. I only say that because I know them. We've had dinner together. They're like such a loving couple. This is your wife? Yeah, okay, all right. Sorry, Bonnie, you know I'm just teasing. Jamie, I've never seen Jamie blush. What's that?
No ring.
No ring, I would have never known. Yeah, okay, now you're just like getting into the area I don't even want to go into. Now I think I'm blushing. First, Jamie was blushing. Now I think, I'm blushing here. But give it a try is a very powerful phrase. And so you get some of these no's and you kind of discern it on that. And then, like, you just kind of say, well, why don't you just give it a try? You know, why don't you just show up for that first growth group? Just give it a try. Why don't you just at least come and observe the baptism? I can't tell you how many times that's worked for me. Just come and observe. You know, why don't you just, they say, well, I can't get a babysitter. Well, why don't you call them back one more time? So, well, I can't get off work. And I mean, you know, you can ask my team. I'm very persistent on this. You know, you say, well, I can't get off work. Well, I tell you what, why don't you call them one more time? Why don't you give it a try one more time? And sometimes, like, I'm so skeptical, I don't even think they even tried. It's just like, well, I couldn't, you know, but is there somebody that could take that shift for you? Is there somebody that could go in for you? Could you delay that meeting? You know, people say, well, I have to go to work every Sunday right after church. I can't go to membership class. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, we got one every second Sunday of the month. Why don't you try to see if you can go in at 3? Would you give it a try? Well, I got an open house on this Sunday. Well, I'll tell you what, could you cancel it and move it to next Sunday? So, well, I got to go in for this. Could you give it a try? Could you move it? And I don't mind asking people. I think what I've got to do is far more important than what they've got to do. Not because it's me, but because it's in their best interest spiritually. I mean, nobody's going to remember that they came in a couple hours later that somebody covered their shift. I mean, you cover each other's shift because some kids get sick. You know, some child, or you have to leave work sometimes early to go pick up somebody or to go to the airport or whatever. You could change it around once for a membership class. You could change it around once for baptism. You know, people always say, I don't want to get baptized. My family can't come to town. They ain't been to see you in 5 years. Just go ahead and get baptized. You know, we'll show them the video when they come down. But give it a try, all kidding aside, is a very, very powerful phrase. So you tell people to give it a try. Another sort of transitional thought that is not a phrase, but it is a reminder that the focus of everything that you're asking, whether they say yes, no, not now, later, tell me more, whatever, is their spiritual growth. So wherever you start in the conversation, it always comes back to spiritual growth. And so you have never been rejected if you walk out of a conversation or you walk out of a meeting, and you'll notice that's the only two options I'm giving you here, a conversation or a meeting. I'll talk about that in a minute. If you've moved the ball forward spiritually, you may have gone into the meeting expecting to recruit a new small group leader. You walked out, however, with a more deeper, mature, growing disciple. You didn't get a small group leader, but you at least move things forward spiritually. So you're never rejected. It was never a failure if you move the ball forward spiritually. I have developed little things that work for me that may or may not work for you, but you know, at the end of the meeting, I always ask them, is there something I can specifically pray for you about? You know, yes, you've told me no. Yes, you've told me I'm, you know, you're never going to do this or whatever. But you know, you and I are together. You care about our church. I care about our church. I'd like to have as a privilege as your pastor to pray for you. How can I pray for you? And suddenly that opens up something I had no idea. I've sat down with people, didn't really get what I thought I came there to get. I say, you know, before I go, I guess I'll just ask you this. Is there ever anything that we do at the Journey or any question you've ever had about church or why we do things like we do? And it just opens up this sort of opportunity to talk about, well, I've always wondered, you know, exactly about this. Or, you know, I mean, just, what, let's see, when was Christmas? So, I mean, just before Christmas, I had a conversation with someone, and I opened that up, and I thought, they asked me the strangest question. They said, what version of the Bible do you read? I said, well, you know, the Greek, Koine. No, anyway, I said, you know, the New Living Translation. And I'm like, why do you ask? And they said, well, you know, I don't even own one anymore. We moved, and I can't find it, and I was wondering if you could help me pick one out. So this great conversation. I mean, just right there on our phones, you know, like pulled it up, you know, talked to them about a Bible. I showed them how to download the Bible app, you know, on their phone or whatever. And I mean, if you had asked me, how many Bibles does this person own? I would have said, you know, a gazillion. I don't know. You know, who knows? But they had moved. So we're in the midst of that, realized they didn't have one, wanted to go and get one. You know, I didn't get what I thought I came into that conversation wanting or, you know, godly pursuing, whatever that was supposed to say. But I moved the ball forward spiritually. And sometimes, you know, it's just amazing what God will do when you're open to that. And you're saying, I'm here to ask you about this thing, but I'm first and foremost here to pastor you and here to shepherd you and be and spiritually help you grow. So give it a try. Always make it the focus of their spiritual growth. Now, the last part of this teaching is how to prevent no before it happens. And so sometimes, forgive me for being so blunt, sometimes the no is your fault. Sometimes the no starts with you. So let me just give you sort of a series of questions that you can consider and ask yourself before you ask someone else to do something. And again, let's just go back to kind of our premise that spiritual growth rarely ever happens till somebody asks somebody to do something sometime. That part of our job as pastors, as shepherds, is to ask. Sometimes asking, if you really wanted to study this in the form of a shepherd, means that we use the staff and we gently use the rod, as it might be, but we're good shepherds. And so we really don't have those tools per se, but we have the ability to ask, the ability to persuade, the ability to circle back around to something like we've talked about. But a lot of times, the reason they say no is because we did not ask properly. So before you make the big ask of someone else, here's a few things to ask yourself. Number one, I'm not going to number these, but it is the first one, so here we go. Is the ask clear in my mind? Am I going into the meeting, am I going into the conversation clearer on what I am trying to accomplish. And the only way I know to do that is to write it down. I'm sure this has never happened to you, but it's happened to me all the time. Things that sound really good in my mind come out really unclear through my vocal cords. Yet if I take time to filter it from my mind, through my heart, down into my fingertips, it is often very, very clarifying. So if what you're asking them to do is unclear in your mind, you can be certain that they're going to say no because they're confused in their own mind. So are you clear about what you're asking them to do? Related to that is, do you have a pre-ask plan? A pre-ask plan. Oh, man. I hope that came out right. The way I learned this is a whole lot easier for me to say. I learned one time from a business author that you should never make a phone call without having a pre-call plan. And a pre-call plan is a whole lot easier to say than pre-ask plan. But this is a little strategy that you would put together that you would prep for the meeting that you're about to go into. And a lot of times we fail because we've not prepared. And people don't say yes because it wasn't clear in our mind, or we didn't have a pre-plan, which I guess by definition means you plan as pre, but you don't have a pre-call plan. So let me tell you the story about how I learned this. So this business author, his name's Jeffrey Fox. All of his early books are good. I haven't read all of his later books. Jeffrey had a chapter in one of his books called How to Leave a Voicemail. And I thought that was really interesting. This guy's like a million-dollar business author, you know, and he's got a chapter on how to leave a voicemail. And he makes a point that most people don't get their calls returned because they leave such a sorry voicemail. Some of you right now on your voicemail have to remind people to slow down before they leave their message. Have you ever gotten that message? Hey, it's Nelson from Church Leader Insights. Give me a call, 561-982-4984. Thanks. What? That was Scott's cell phone number, by the way, just in case you wondered. And you got to like listen to it again. And you got to listen to it again. You got to listen to it again. Pastors do this a lot. You know, hey, I was calling to talk to you at the baptism. Just give me a call here at the church. Beep. Well, what's the church number? You know, how do you want me to find it? So now I got to go, like, look up that number. But let me tell you something about everybody in your church. They've not memorized your phone number. They've not memorized your church's number. You know, just check out our website to buy. Beep. I mean, what's your website? So he's saying, like, here's how you leave a voicemail. And so here's how you leave it. Hey, my name is Nelson. I'm calling from Church Leader Insights. My phone number is 1-800-264-5129. That's area code 800-264-5129. I was calling because you wanted information about my assimilation seminar. Again, my name is Nelson, that's N-E-L-S-O-N, and you can reach me at area code 800-264-5129. And so he teaches you how to do that because people are not ready at the beginning, and then you got to frame the area code because most of us live in areas now, like in your neck of the woods, you probably have like 3 area codes. The biggest change in my dad's life is like he got this new area code where they've retired up in Western North Carolina. It's killing him, it's like everything, all of his buddies now, he can't just dial 7 digits, he got to dial 10 digits. And in the little town where he lives in Western North Carolina, they've retired, they've got like 2 area codes now. And like, he's so happy that he got the original area code and they didn't assign him the new area code. So he feels like, it's like when I moved to New York and I got a 917 number, I felt like, man, I really made it because I got a 917 number. Instead of the 347 or 626 or these new area codes or whatever. So this business author was teaching you how to leave a voicemail, and he's telling people that a lot of times people don't call you back because you stink at leaving a voicemail. So, man, I can leave a voicemail like nobody's business. I mean, people call me back. I mean, usually because I say I've got their wallet, but still, like, hey, I found your wallet, and call me back or whatever. But I just thought about that, like, how many times do we call someone and we don't have a plan? You ever called someone and you're about like 2 minutes into it and you're kind of, oh, man, I forgot what I was calling you about. Can I call you back? I can't remember what I was calling you about. I mean, it just instills confidence. I mean, it just like automatically says, I'm going to say yes to whatever it is. I don't know what it is, but I'm so excited that when he calls me back that he cared so much, you know, that he knows what he wants to ask me. So, you know, I refuse to have a phone call, and I do most of my management, you know, with our decentralized staff by phone, or we now, people, they have to look at me, which means I have to put a shirt on because we're on Skype or something like that. That's a little joke, too. Thanks, Jamie, for laughing, or whoever that was down here. But, I mean, you know, I won't do it unless you got the little checklist. Like, here's the things we're going to talk about. I want to talk to you about this. I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about this. Let's just get to it. That's a pre-call plan. You know, here's who I am. Here's what I'm calling about. Here's what I want to specifically ask you to do. And I have a plan in doing that. And I used to think, well, this, you know, this is because, you know, in New York, we're dealing with such professionals and, you know, they work on Wall Street and all that stuff. And then I moved down to South Florida and I found out retirees appreciate that too. You know, people that have tons of time, they appreciate that too. That you're prepared. You've got a little list. You've thought this through exactly what you're asking them to do. You know the who, the what, the where, the when, the whys of it. You know how long you're asking them to commit. You're not having to, you know, get out your phone or fumble through papers to remember the dates or whatever it is. So you got to have a pre-ask plan, and that helps clarify the ask in your mind. And then it also means you're not relying on your memory. And people appreciate that. Then another one is, have you established authority or rapport before you make the ask? Have you established authority or rapport before you make the ask? And I'm not talking about abusing authority or anything like that. I'm just talking about we do have a delegated biblical authority when it comes to asking people to do things. And so a lot of times you have to kind of back up just a bit. So you ask someone to be a part of a capital campaign at your church. It might be in your best interest to establish a path of how the church has impacted them, how their life has been changed, and remind them of the good things that your church has done before you ask them to write a big check. So you can go right to the check writing part if you want, but you're going to have greater potential for commitment if you sort of establish authority and establish the rapport before you go about doing that. Before you ask someone to lead a group, if you remind them of how their life has been changed by being in groups and how the dynamic of being in groups has made a difference with them and how they've seen other people go out of a group and go lead a group. And you're establishing not just your authority, but you're establishing authority for the ask. You know, when you are talking about baptism, you establish the authority of baptism by establishing that, you know, Jesus was baptized, that, you know, all throughout history people have been baptized. And I know some of you do baptism different. I come out of a culture, as most of you know, where we, you know, do adult believers baptism, or as, you know, some of you refer to it, Anabaptism. But nonetheless, you know, I establish the authority of that. And so I establish that. You know, biblically, what I'm asking you to do is in your best interest. You know, here's the scriptural authority for that. You know, as your pastor, I care about you, and I'm not afraid to ask you to do that. And you know, I've asked you in the past to do things, and look how you've grown. And so, you know, just like you've trusted me in the past, you trust me here in the future. And so when I say establish authority, I don't mean that you say, I'm your pastor and you do this. You could probably get them to do it maybe once, if you're lucky, in the midst of that. And I'm not even sure that's leadership by influence. That may be more leadership by intimidation. Which again works once, but I don't recommend it. But there's authority that you establish around the ask that alerts them to this is important, this is biblical, you know, this is right. And then there's sort of a rapport. And you know, some people need a little more rapport building than others. When we hire someone on our staff, we make them take a test. We don't make them, we ask them to if they ever want to get a paycheck. We have everyone on our staff take a personality profile, is really what it is, not a test, called the DISC. And over the years and hiring staff and working on this a lot, you know, I've learned what the high D means, what a low D means, what a high I means, what a low I means. You're familiar sort of with the concept. And so the two I always look at before I have a conversation with the staff member is the two middle ones. And actually, if you come to our office, we've got our name on the door, and then below that, it's got their DISC profile with a little chart of where they fall, and then it's got, does it still have their StrengthsFinder character? So then below that, it's got their StrengthsFinder. And it's just a little plaque right on the door. I actually stole that from being at the Dave Ramsey office. I thought it was so cool. And so Carrick and I are in Dave Ramsey's office, like taking pictures of all of his doors or whatever. He thought we were trying to hire his staff. We're like, no, we want to do these nameplates for our office. And you know, there are people whose offices I don't go into all that often, or I'm not always, you know, in conversation with them, but it's right there. And if they've got like a really high I, you know, that stands for, what does that stand? Interpersonal? What that stands for? What is it? Intuitiveness? I think you're confusing that with the Myers-Briggs. Okay, it's going to go with what I said. Which is in ours, I'm pretty certain it's like the interpersonal thing. But a high I says that I better take just a moment to chit-chat with them. I don't know what it means. I don't know what the I stands for, but I know what it means practically. It means that if they have a high I better chit-chat with them just a little bit. So I've got my little pre-call list of things I want to ask them to do. But Lord help me, I've got to ask them, how you doing today? Family okay? And the whole time I'm thinking, can we just get on with this? Can we just get on with this? I mean, let's move on with this. But, you know, I go, oh, well, look, you've painted your office. Boy, it's so pretty. I like that. Yes, okay. All right, now on down to business. Because they've got the high I, and they need a little bit of that. And then the S stands for something, in my mind, it stands for sensitive. I don't know what it really means. But it, you know, it stands for something like, okay, now they're sensitive, so I've got to, like, you know, sort of approach it differently than that. And, you know, there is a way of doing that. Like, some people, they just want you to cut to the chase. Like me, I just want you to cut to the chase. What do you want, and how quickly can I get you out of my office? Just give it to me straight. You know, like, cut to the chase. Funny enough, by the way, if you want to know my DISC, it's high D, second tier I. Believe it or not, it really is. My S is in the toilet. You can say whatever you want to about me. It won't bother me one single bit because I'm like the least sensitive person that you're ever going to meet. And then my C is just barely above the line, which most people think my C is off the chart, but it's my D that drives the C. Like, I'm sort of anal about things, and I like to systematize things, and I'm conscientious about things because of the D. Now, the D drives everybody else wild because the D is so high, I want to change the room around. I mean, we moved this photo booth like 15 times before I finally settled over here, and the only thing that convinced me is they said Jimmy would sit behind it. So there's a guy behind the photo booth over here, in case you don't know, and he's back there running everything, like the wizard. He's the wizard of Orlando. But you know, that's like my D. I want to change things around just a bit. So one of the ways you approach me if you want to get me to commit to something is you bring me something that's like 99% correct. And then I'll fix that 1% and agree with it because then it became my idea anyway. But that's a whole other story. But the point I'm trying to make has nothing to do with all that. It is that people require different approaches. You know, and you've kind of got to understand that. And, you know, you've got to navigate through that just a little bit. And sometimes rapport and authority also are related to the situation in which you find yourself asking. And that takes me to my next question, which is, are you asking in the right way? Are you asking in the right way? So, you know, on Sunday, if you're sort of asking someone to step off to the side of the auditorium and chat with you for just a moment, there's a time and place for that. You know, everybody's leaving the service. You're down there. Hey, brother. Hey, sister. Could I just ask you something real quick? And you kind of step off over to the side of your auditorium and you have a little conversation. There's a time for that, but you got to ask, is that the right way for this ask to be made? Yeah, because depending on what you're going to ask them about, asking in the middle of a crowded auditorium where like their family is leaving and they're waiting to pick their children up in children's church, that may not be the best way to ask. Now, that could be the best time to say, can I call you tomorrow and set up a time to meet with you? Or I noticed you're going to be by the office on Thursday. When you're by there, could we pull aside for 15 or 20 minutes because I got something really cool I want to talk to you about? That's worth doing that. But sometimes we ask in the wrong way and we don't have enough time to establish the authority or build up the rapport. Now, if it's just a real simple thing, you may be able to do it right there at the auditorium. Or you may say, okay, come a little early and I'll meet with you. But sometimes when you're trying to establish rapport, it's not about them liking you or you matching their I or their C or whatever it might be. It is that their mind is somewhere else and they can't focus on the very thing that you're asking them to do. So you want to think through, how should this ask be made? And is it going to be a meeting? Is it going to be stacked on top of something else? Is it going to be a phone call? And in my mind, those are the only two mediums through which you should ask someone to do something. Either a phone call or a personal conversation. A lot of times you get a no because of the medium through which you make the ask. So it's sort of a subpoint under the right way. But it's really easy for somebody to say no via SMS text. It's really easy for them to ignore you through SMS text. It's really easy to say no through a Facebook direct message. A little Instagram pops up. Would you be willing to serve on Sunday? Yes, no, check yes. Okay, no. I'll just say no to that. Oh, but it's got so cute. It's got like a little cat hanging by his last paw. Hang on. Okay, never mind. But it's amazing to me how many pastors ask the wrong way and then ask through the wrong media. You know, it's really easy for you to say no via social media. It's really easy for you to say no on your phone. It's much harder to say no when you're looking at me eyeball to eyeball. Or we're sitting side by side at a table. Now, can you set up the ask that way? Yeah, sure you can. Can you get some easy fruit maybe through email or something like that? Yeah, you can. You know, if somebody's ready to do something, you know, an email is just enough to get their assent. But you're not going to be very persuasive. You're not going to, you know, go beyond that first tier by email or by social media or whatever. So you've got to ask, you know, does this deserve a phone call? And then further on that same point, does this deserve a scheduled phone call or would an impromptu call be just fine? And those are two different things. Because the currency of leadership is attention in our day. The currency of leadership is not even what I was talking about on Wednesday, which is influence. That's what people used to say. The real currency of leadership right now, and the hardest thing, if you will, to buy, the hardest thing to obtain, is attention. And so if you're making an ask, if you're trying to get someone to say yes to something that is spiritually beneficial to them, a key concern and a key cost in the midst of all this equation, if you will, is how do I get their attention? And so do I make a call to schedule a call? Do I send an email, try to schedule a call? Can I do an impromptu call? And there is a time for that. You know, sometimes something's so simple and it's so easy, you could just make an impromptu call. You know, a lot of my impromptu calls are, did I catch you at a good time? Can I have, you know, you got 2 or 3 minutes here for us to decide on this versus that? These are very low-level kind of conversations, you know, of you've already agreed to be a group leader. You've already agreed to be at group leaders training. I'm just calling to see if you could come a few minutes early and help out with something that we're doing, or if you could stay a few minutes late for a special team that we've put together inside of that meeting. Yes, there is a time for that sort of impromptu. If you got 2 minutes, I'm going to build on something that you're already doing. But if a person has a serious question about baptism or about membership or about salvation, it might be better that we both have our attention. Sort of serious thought on that, a funny thought on that. Serious thought is you can be assured that I'm never distracted when I'm doing coaching with you. You don't ever have to worry about what else I've got going on. I mean, first of all, my cave is really boring. It's got books and like that picture of Spurgeon. So I am focused. I would like to think you're giving me that same kind of focus, but I'm also a realist and I know that you're not. But when we talk about locking the door and putting the dog out and shutting out all the concerns and all that kind of stuff, it's because certain things demand focus. So I'm focused when I'm coaching you. I'm focused when I'm trying to make an ask, and I want to try to get the attention of the other person, and that requires sometimes an agreement that we're going to focus on this. Now, sort of a funny thing is I happened to be on staff one time at a very large mega church that many of you would know, and I'm in the bathroom, and a guy comes in on a cell phone, and I'm thinking, well, that's always weird to me anyway. Like, you know, you don't have time to go to the bathroom without being on your cell phone. But, you know, people do it. I've learned to live with it. It's fine. And inside the stall, I hear him talking to this person about their baptism. And he's explaining, you know, that it's baptism by immersion. And, you know, the word for immersion means to dip under. And, I mean, this is like going on for like quite some time. Well, by now I'm ready to go, but I think I just can't leave. I got to see. You know, like, what's going on? And then, like, you know, as soon as I step back, like, the automatic flush, like, I realize I'm standing in the midst of, like, the automatic flush thing, you know, and, like, all the urinals start to flush, and, you know, us. And then, Carrie Kiefer, we tell the story, and the guy, I guess the other person said, where are you? You know, because I don't know the other side of the, I can only hear his side of the question. This is what the guy said. He said, I'm in the car wash. Not the way I do it, you know, maybe not the, you know, the way he baptized. And that person was Lance Witt, just so you know, when we were on staff together. No, it's not true. Not true. So, I always wonder about that. I don't understand people who are on their phones like that. But then I can definitely tell you, you know, that was the wrong way to be doing a baptism follow-up. And funny enough, I did baptisms that weekend at the church. That was one of my responsibilities. And I kind of wondered if I was, like, baptizing maybe the person that, you know, they were talking to. And I didn't have the guts to ask them or anything like that. But that was definitely the wrong medium. You know, a cell phone in the bathroom, even if they had the other person's attention, not exactly the best. But, you know, now you got their attention. So is it a phone call? Is it an impromptu call? Is it a scheduled call? Is it a meeting? And sometimes that's the only way you can get someone's attention, which is the currency between a leader and a follower that leads to the right agreement or maybe even sometimes a no. But at least you had the best opportunity to make that invitation, to extend that opportunity. Then, next, are you asking in such a way that you expect a yes? Are you asking in such a way that you expect a yes? I have two stories on this, one that doesn't quite fit, but you might like. I'm going to tell it on a call probably next month. I landed at the Nashville airport the other day, and Kelly's with me. We didn't have a lot of luggage, but, you know, when I travel with my wife, like, you know, we got more luggage than we do normally. I mean, I literally can travel 2 or 3 weeks around the world with my carry-on. I mean, you know, if you've ever traveled with me, I'm kind of fanatical about that. I wear the same thing every day. It's really simple. But we've got a good bit of luggage, and, you know, I have the abdominal issues and all that stuff, so, like, we're really careful about carrying luggage. And normally we would not have taken, like, the little free shuttle, but it was just far enough from the terminal to where we needed to go that I thought, let's take the free shuttle. So we see the little guy over there with the free shuttle, and there's nobody there, it's just us. And his words are, you don't need the shuttle, do you? Now, he's a young guy, he seems like a really nice kid. He actually said it, you know, very warm, you know, kind of way, but his words were, you don't need the shuttle, do you? Now, you know, we look like able-bodied people, you know, I'm a lot stronger than I appear. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to take the shuttle. Like I say to him, yes, you know, we would like to use the shuttle. And he says, how far are you going? And I said, well, I'm going to the, you know, National or Avis or whatever it was, rental car center. And I'd been there before. I sort of knew my way around. He says, it's not that far. You can walk it. And I'm like, well, we're just going to walk it. And so we did. We just went ahead and walked it, you know. And the whole time he's smiling, waving at us, you know. And all that. Now, I'll tell that story later about two other instances I had during that same trip in regards to customer service and, you know, trying to get what you want. But that phrasing of, you don't want to take the shuttle, do you? I mean, he wanted to know. I said that poorly. He wanted me to say no. He was hoping I would say no. Now, he's out there freezing, standing beside the shuttle, because it's like, you know, 13 degrees. I would have thought he would have wanted to kind of put our stuff and at least have a brief respite, you know, to drive us. I mean, what literally would have been a 30-second drive. I mean, it wasn't that far of a walk, but still, you know. I thought he would have wanted to get into his shuttle and drive us, but he didn't. He wanted to know. And I've seen it happen. You know, you don't want to be baptized on Sunday, do you? You're not ready for membership class, are you? I know you've got a really hectic work schedule. I know you just had that new baby. And so would you like to start volunteering on Thursday night? Well, you just gave them the answer. You just like made all the excuses for them. I know you always work on Sunday, but now, you know, a lot of times we do things like this unintentionally. And I think a lot of times it's because we don't have the authority or we don't expect them to say yes. I mentioned that I don't mind asking people to get off work. I don't mind asking people to change their schedule because I really do believe fundamentally what I'm asking them to do is more important than anything else they could ever do. I think it'd be worth you not selling that house this weekend so that you could come to membership class because that is far more important spiritually. You know, it's just like I tell people, you know, tithing and all that and stuff. But anyway, I digress. But the other story that I think is more connected is the story about Spurgeon and the young preacher who came to him and said, why is it, Mr. Spurgeon, that after you preach, people say yes to Christ? And he said, because, young man, when I preach, I expect people to say yes to Christ. There is a transference of feeling that happens when you are involved in a conversation with someone. And your enthusiasm, your belief, your view of what's best, your high view of what's best can be transferred to them in the same way that faith can lift it up. It can be transferred to them even if they are not excited about it, even if they don't have the faith to do it, even if they don't feel like they have the ability to do it. So you've got to be aware of this transference that goes on. And so sometimes they're saying no is because you're giving off a no vibe. And sometimes they're saying, I'll give it a try, is because you've given off such a transference of faith and hope and excitement that they can find the courage to do it. And that's why when I sit across from someone and I'm asking them to do something, if under God, I really believe this is the best thing that they possibly can do, I want to transfer to them that same sense of hope, that same sense of faith, that same sense of potential that that I'm feeling so that they can muster beyond all of their excuses and beyond all of their fears and all of their uncertainties and say, okay, I'll try. And so I want to preach in such a way that I expect people to say yes. I want to ask in such a way. I'm so excited to ask you about this. I mean, I'm so glad we were able to meet here today because God's been doing all of this and other people have been benefiting. And if you will jump in, you can have a piece in that too. And so I want to ask. And then related to that is as you make that ask, have you clarified how their saying yes will help them grow spiritually? So you see, when I'm asking with this enthusiasm or I'm asking with this transference of faith, what I'm really doing is I'm showing how it helps them. I'm showing how it will grow them. You know, we call in our sort of tradition of baptism, you know, baptism as the first step of obedience. Well, you know, if that phrase is right, the first step of obedience, it's going to be very hard to take the second, third, fourth step till you take the first step. You know, we talk about how membership matters and being part of a family matters. Well, yes, you can attend and get a lot at our church by being a regular attender, but there's something about the commitment that you make to membership You can receive a lot by being a group member. But, you know, like that Dead Sea, if you only have an input in your life and no outflow in your life, you know, you're eventually going to fill up and it's going to begin to become dry. So the best thing for you is to step up and move from being the Dead Sea to being the Sea of Galilee and lead. And I'm shortcutting, of course, this language for you because of time and because you kind of know these stories. But, you know, I may take time to explain that. Here's how it helps you grow spiritually. And I think you can figure that out, but it's hard to figure that out on the fly. It's hard to figure that out when you're rushed. But if you've got a pre-ask plan, you've got an arranged meeting, you're building authority for what you're asking them to do, and you've got the right rapport, and you're doing it in the right way, and you're presenting it with such an expectation that they're going to say, yes, don't forget. Show them how it helps them grow spiritually. And then if you want to layer on top of that, show them how they're saying yes to what you are asking them to do is part of God's, quote, chain of salvation. Do you remember this from the ministry seminar? In the ministry seminar, thank you, Horace, one person. Thank you, sir. All right, we're on it, man. Me and you, we're tracking right here. It's good. Because if I had to do the preaching and the yesing, it would take twice as long. But he'll do the yesing and I'll do the... All right. But you're right. I mean, the chain of salvation. So the chain of salvation is an idea that I presented in the ministry seminar that for whatever volunteer area that someone is involved in, you've got to help them see what link they are in the chain of salvation. So at the end of the chain is somebody coming to Christ. What people don't realize is it's a whole sequential series of steps and avenues and volunteers and all that that make that chain possible. So, you know, the example that I think I use in the book about the ministry system is when a single mom sets in a service and gives her life to Christ, there is a whole chain of people that were involved in that. Of course, you know, we always think of the most obvious ones. Okay, there was the preacher who preached salvation, and how can they hear without a preacher? But then there was the worship team that created an atmosphere that opened up their heart to the preaching of God's word. But then there were the ushers and greeters that helped that single mom get to where she needed to be and find a seat. There was the check-in people at Kids that made her feel safe and secure so that she could leave her child in the elementary class. There were all those elementary teachers and volunteers who were watching her kids so that for just a few minutes in the service, God could get her attention without that little one pulling on her dress or pulling on her hair. There was also the message notes that she took notes on, and those were folded by volunteers on Thursday night who prayed over them and folded them in such a way that it wasn't a distraction, so that instead of her looking at it and saying, oh, well, somebody folded this really weird, it was actually folded in such a neat and proper manner that she could engage it. There was the person who proofed the notes because she just happens to be an English teacher, and she would have been distracted from being able to read the notes if it had been full of typos, and then the very verse that would have impacted her life, instead of saying beloved, it said be-loved or whatever, and you just could go on and on and on. And what you see in that decision of her coming to faith in Christ, there were 50 people who had a link in that chain. And when I'm asking someone to do something, I want to, if at all possible, position them where they should be so that they see the end result is the salvation of a soul or the growth of a disciple. And that's all part of this asking. Got it? Another question to ask yourself, and I think this, I've got two more just in case you're keeping score at home. Are you the right person to ask? Okay, let's back up here for just a minute. So having done all of this and having really laid it on you and helping you finesse no and nuance no, I have to also raise the point of, are you the right person to ask? So remember, this is under the heading that sometimes no starts with you. It's under the heading of preventing no before it happens. And in general, there's never anything wrong with the pastor asking. We are in the asking business. It is part of our job description. But I think sometimes you may have to ask, or are you the best one to ask? And I don't have a lot of great illustrations in this because I delegate so much at our church. Sometimes people wonder what I do. People say, well, you know, everybody else does everything. What do you do? Well, I make sure they do it. That's what I do. So I'm always trying to think, you know, who is the person that has the best relationship? And that's a very good question. Who is the person that is most likely to get the yes? Who is the person that can ask in the most persuasive way? Who is the person that has the best rapport and the most experience at making this ask? And then who is the person that I can serve backup to? Because maybe if they give them a nah, I could come in and add a little bit more to it and get a yes. I'm really good at serving as the backup guy. You know, after somebody else has planted the seed and maybe gotten a tentative, no, I'm not so sure. Well, let's bring in Pastor Nelson to answer your questions. But the truth is, sometimes it's the wrong person asking. Now, there is a time, by the way, for it not to be delegated by you, but for it to be by you. And the natural tendency is to delegate it. One example on this is when you're trying to raise up growth group leaders or small group leaders. If you've studied our group system, you know that we do not ask the current group leader to raise up new group leaders. We only ask the current group leader to give us a list of future group leaders. Let me explain that for just a moment. So a group has been meeting for a period of time, and there's a very good group leader. And I go to Joe, and I say, Joe, you've done a really good job leading a group. You know, we want to multiply our groups, and we want to have new groups for next semester. Who are two or three people in your group that you think would be good group leaders? And he would say, well, there's Karen. She led for me when I was away on vacation, and I heard she did a really good job, so I write down Karen. Better write it down so I remember for the sake of this illustration. Then he said, you know, then there's Jose. Jose's really been my coordinator, and he's been my coordinator the last couple times, and he does a great job with prayer requests, and honestly, he's like a co-teacher with me anyway, so I write down, okay, Jose. Then he says, okay, yeah, then there's also John over here. And John, I don't know all that well, but he seems to have a pretty good bit of knowledge. And I think he told me he led three semesters ago, but he's been off. I'm not so sure, but I think he might be good. And so I write down John. Now, Joe apparently likes people who have initials that are very close to his own first name, because he's got Jose, John, and Karen. But that's the way my mind works. So now, Joe, my group leader, has given me these three potential group leaders. Now, I could have Joe go make the ask, but I didn't really equip Joe to make the ask. I've equipped and trained Joe to lead the group. Joe may also have such a great relationship with them that they would feel bad about leaving his group to go lead a group. So even if they wanted to lead a group, they would say no to it because, you know, Lord knows who's going to lead when Joe's on vacation if Karen's not in the group. Or, you know, Joe and Jose have such a great relationship, he just wants to stay with him forever. So Joe, who may seem like the logical choice because he's the group leader, actually becomes not the greatest of choice because he's the group leader. But then if it comes to me, or if it comes to, you know, our small group pastor, because our church is, you know, has a lot of staff, here's how that can play out. I can now call Karen. So I got an arranged maybe phone call. I could do this by phone call, or maybe an arranged meeting after or before service. And I could talk with Karen. I say, Karen, I want to talk to you about the next semester of groups that we have. And I know you've had a really good experience with Joe this semester. Oh, yeah. You know, Joe's been great. And I said, you know, we're always looking to raise up new group leaders, and next semester we're going to have more groups than ever. Oh, yeah. I'm part of the system. I believe in it. Joe said you filled in with him. You know, you filled in for him when he was on vacation. Oh, yeah, I did. You know, and I finessed this around. I established the authority of the position, established the rapport. And then here's kind of the clincher on this. Joe has endorsed you as a great group leader. So now Joe doesn't make the ask. Joe becomes the endorser of this. And then I make the ask of her to lead the group. And then, you know, if she says, well, no, I don't know if I'm quite ready. You know, I can go in a lot of different directions. Okay, well, I can't do it next semester. What about the semester after that? Or I've already committed to something over here. What about after that? Or my favorite in this situation is, what if we put Karen and Jose together and they led a group? And so now, you know, we take two people and we make them one group leader or whatever. But the point is, you got to ask who is best at making this ask. Who is the right person that is most likely to get the right result? So a lot of times somebody is serving in an area in a church and they have a relationship with that pastor. And you know, it's not right for, you know, somebody to come from another area of the church and make that ask. Or maybe there's such an affinity with somebody in this area that it's better for somebody else to make the ask. You got to look at this from an individual perspective and see who the right person is to make the ask. Finally. Hey, settle down. Are you ready for them to say yes? That's the final one. Are you ready for them to say yes? So you prepare before the ask, but you also sometimes limit the ability to say yes because you're not prepared if they say yes. I know this is not a true story, but a friend of mine was telling me the other day about a non-Christian religious group that goes door to door trying to share their faith. He'd seen them down all week working parts of their neighborhood, and so he told his wife, if they come to our house, I'm going to let them in. So the way he tells the joke is he gave them a pretty hard time at the door, told them that he wasn't really all that sure, but they could come in. And according to him, they came in and sat down, and he started asking them some questions, and they clammed up. And he said, what's wrong? I hope I haven't offended you. And the young man said, no, I've just never gotten this far before with anybody. Nobody's ever let us in. They didn't go into this. I sometimes feel like, you know, we get the yes, and then it's like we're so excited about it, we don't know what to do next. You know? Or even if we got the yes, we wouldn't be ready to know what's next. You know, it's like we're so used to getting no, we finally have somebody say yes. We're like, oh, my goodness. You know? So, you know, yes, I will be baptized. Well, I think can I call you back in a few minutes? Because I got to go pull the list of things to do now that you've said yes to be baptized. You know? Or, well, I didn't really have that file open. I wasn't quite ready. So you got to be ready for the yes. And there's a lot to that. I have a lot of other little jokes and stuff that I could tell you about that. But, you know, Zig Ziglar used to say, I'm so optimistic about getting a yes that I'd take tartar sauce when I went to fish for Moby Dick. And that's, he's ready, you know. So you got to be optimistic. I talked about that, but you also got to be ready. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's your growth group covenant. Here's the dates of our growth group training. Here's you know what we expect on baptism. Here's what you need to wear. And you got to be ready to answer those second set of questions because yes, institutes an immediate series of then events and opportunities for them as they say yes. And maybe God isn't giving you a yes because you're not ready for them to say yes. So I wish I had a big ending. I do not have a big ending. I would say to you that asking is a master skill. I hope I've given you a few tools through which you can view asking or a few new lenses through which you can view asking. I hope that you will continue to ask. And the big idea from this talk has been most no's are not dead ends. They're simply forks in the road. If you agree, say yes. All right, good. I got to yes eventually after an hour and 40 minutes. So hopefully that's been very, very helpful to you.